Flower Friends podcast. This is Sarah Nayani coming at you from Seattle, Washington, except today I'm actually calling in from Portland, Oregon, but I'm just visiting a friend here and I normally live in Seattle. At home, I grow loads of flowers in my small city yard and I create floral arrangements that bring the outside in with local seasonal ingredients from my garden and other local growers. On the podcast, I share my experience of switching careers and starting my small flower business, which is Grow Girl Seattle, and I interview inspiring guests about flower growing and floral design. I hope you will come along with me as a flower friend to learn and grow together. This is the second episode of season 4, and today we have Miranda Bowman from Wild Rye Farm on the podcast. I have talked about Miranda before because I've bought her mum cuttings and I love her beautiful cut flowers that she offers at Seattle Wholesale, but in the past I was referring to her as Wild Rye Farm instead of Wild Rye. It's one word on their website and it is pronounced Wild Rye, so I want to get that straight for everybody. I have been mispronouncing it. But Wild Rye Farm is a specialty cut flower farm in Bellingham, Washington, and Miranda specializes in growing sustainable and exceptional quality cut flowers and foliage, and she focuses especially on heirloom chrysanthemums. So I asked Miranda to come on the podcast. I wanted to hear about her background in growing, her growing space, and how she sells her flowers. And then we dove into a conversation all about mums. Miranda is currently offering about 30 cultivars of mum cuttings, and she's shipping nationwide. She's basically adding more to the shop as she's taking and rooting the cuttings. So they're super fresh, super high quality. I have several of hers in my garden. And as they become available, they're on her website. But the best way to find out about it is through her newsletter. So I thought it was a good time to release this episode in case you're looking for some gorgeous heirloom chrysanthemums to add to your garden or growing space. And if you want to get on her mailing list, you can go to her website, wilddryfarm.com. Before we get into that interview with Miranda, I thought I would just share some of the garden projects and things I've been working on the past week or so. Actually longer than that, I've been working on overhauling my rain garden, which is taking a bit longer than I thought because of all of this bindweed or morning glories that's been kind of just taking over and getting out of control the past few years, and especially the back corner of my rain garden, which is like up against our house, and it just doesn't look very nice because all the vines grow up the deck. They, you know, take over anything that's in its wake. It's just like it'll grow up any other plant and try to, you know, kind of bind it and drown it out from the light. It's basically stealing from the other plants that are in the garden. And so I want to remove that. And it is a really difficult project. My neighbor, actually, I was back there working the other day. It was a couple weeks ago. And he leaned over his fence and we were just chatting about how we were going to tackle it. And he was saying he kind of thought it was an impossible task and we might have to use chemicals. And I was like, hell no, we're going to do this organically. At least I am. And so I'm trying. I mean, I'm hoping this is going to work, but basically I just want to minimize it if I can. So what I did is in the back corner, which is kind of the worst area, I decided to sheet mulch it. And looking back, I probably would have done some digging and pulling out all of the roots from that area. I did some of that, but I'm being much more thorough on these later sections I've been working on. And I kind of wish before I did the sheet mulching, I was a little more thorough about pulling out everything from this area. But what I did is I took some extra thick cardboard that I had. I laid it down and I wet it so that it would kind of like be formed to the garden. Because the cardboard is really flat, but once you wet it, you can kind of step on it and make it fit to whatever, you know, little divots you might have in the garden space. Then I took some landscape fabric, which I don't love using because I find that dirt will just fall down through like the whatever you use on top of landscape fabric, whether that's stones or mulch. And basically little plants and weeds can grow up through there. And then it just makes whatever you have on top kind of like It's just kind of pointless, but in this specific case where I'm trying to block out light from like a very aggressive weed, I decided to put some landscape fabric on top of the cardboard and just have that extra barrier, make it a little bit harder for the bindweed to grow up. Then I took 6 to 8 inches, depending on the area, and I put cedar chips in. So yeah, about 6 to 8 inches deep. And so this is all in the back corner of my garden. It looks really nice now because it was just like kind of crappy, like gray, brown, green color this time of year. And now it's the super fresh cedar chips. It just looks really happy and like someone cares about this rain garden, which I always have. I just haven't had the time. It's kind of like the last frontier in my garden. And I haven't had the time to just really tackle this until recently. And so basically what I did is took those chips and I made pathways, like filled in that corner and then made pathways down to the sidewalk and then one to our driveway. And that way we can always get around whatever is in the garden and get back, like the people that come and read the meter on the side of the house, like wanted to make it really accessible because it's been a bit overgrown and kind of embarrassing when people come by. So I'm trying to make it just look a little bit sharper, but also be filled with plants. So that's just kind of the back edge, basically. So I'm going through the rest of the garden, and I don't love to till up the soil because there's so many important nutrients, so many important little organisms that we can't see that are just tending to that soil and making this beautiful place to live for plants. But in this case where I'm dealing with bindweed, I decided to really dig down where I'm doing my plantings and try to pull out the roots. And bindweed or morning glories, it grows like a vine above ground where it like wraps up whatever it's growing up. But underground, it's kind of also grows like a vine. It's like these big, long, loose white roots. And they're pretty easy to pull out, but they snap really easily. So in order to follow where it's going, you have to really go like tunnel underground to find it. So I've been doing that and digging down about a foot deep, which sounds like really tough, and it is, but it's actually so much fun. I just love getting my hands in the dirt. I love having a project. And what I've been doing is picking and choosing some of the shrubs and plants that have been back there I absolutely love and I want to keep them. So I've been trying to clean out the bindweed around those existing plants and leave them in place. We have a beautiful quince bush back there. It's hot pink. It's blooming right now. Love that. Has great foliage. I want to keep that. And then we have a tree back there and a couple other shrubs that are awesome. But the rest really hasn't been working for me. It's been like overgrown with grasses and weeds and euphorbia trying to grow up in there, and it's just not cohesive, and I really want to make it a look that I love and put some plants in there that I can cut off of. So I've been making a list for a while of things that I would love to have more frequent access to, things like Ruby Slippers hydrangea, which is like an oak leaf type of hydrangea. And then abelia is another one. And then I love the viburnums. So I got a couple of those. And then I do have some nine barks here, but I just use so much nine bark foliage. I thought it would be really nice to have some plants here. I had the Diablo, which is like the dark red one, in my backyard. And so I got some raspberry lemonade, which is a really beautiful color. It's like a citron green. And in the like late spring, early summer, it has beautiful flowering buds along some of the stems. So I put a couple of those plants in. And basically what I'm trying to do is first go through the whole garden from the back forward and get out all of the weeds and grass and dirt and stuff that I just don't want there. And then try to shape the garden. There's a few like big grasses I'm keeping that help filter the water in the rain garden part, where there's like, basically what happens is in our rain garden, the gutters go basically drain along into these pipes that are piped into our rain garden. So it empties all of the water from our gutters into the rain garden as sort of like a cache or catching area that takes that rain water and tries to filter it and make sure it doesn't like all run down the driveway and down the street and collect oils from cars and, you know, bring that all into these like places around Seattle, which have amazing species of salmon and just amazing marine life around here. It's basically trying to help protect runoff. And so I'm keeping a bunch of the plants that help do that in the garden and keeping sort of a, not a pond, but sort of a pond shape, very, very small, like bathtub sized, where that those pipes drain into that can stay there. And then trying to do some more water loving plants along that area and then keep the rest. Like foxglove was growing really well in the back corner of our rain garden. And I love foxglove, as you know, if you've ever listened to this podcast before. So I had a bunch of foxglove seedlings and I tried to put those in the back in the like dappled shade area and then kind of coming into the sunshine. And then I have a bunch of other just cold hardy seedlings that around the base of these plants where I've put shrubs, they're not going to get very big this year. They're fairly small. So I just decided to put all of my cold hardy seedlings there because I didn't really have much other room in the garden right now. I'm still waiting on all my tulips to bloom. And so once all of my tulip beds are cleared, I'll put the warmer loving annuals in those beds. So I just thought it would be great to get some of my cold hardy plants into these beds, get them outside early and growing around these shrubs. And then I think that will also help protect with the weeds by getting like strong seedlings in the ground. Then basically that will help cover up any areas where a ton of weeds would just take hold in that newly tilled soil. And then I had a bunch of lily bulbs, so I planted those in there. I'm going to move some extra daffodils after they're done blooming this year into the garden and just basically try to fill every inch with gorgeous blooming flowers and foliage, blooming branches, things like that, that I'll be able to use in my floral design, but that will create a beautiful natural environment for animals and bugs and birds, but also be something I can cut off of and just look a little nicer aesthetically than my completely overgrown rain garden. But it's been just so nice to get my hands in the dirt. I forgot how much I love doing that. It's last year or the year before I worked on a perennial garden in our backyard, but that's really the last like hard scape, like big project that I've done. And so it's just really nice to sit out there. I know most people would think it's really lame to be like inch by inch going through your garden and like methodically taking out weeds and planting new things. But I just have so much fun just sitting in the dirt. It's like my favorite thing to do. And I've really been reflecting this past year on how much I was leaning only into the floristry side of things because I was just trying to move all of the flowers that I was growing. And I didn't feel like I had the right balance last year of growing and floristry. And so this year I'm trying to strike a better tone where I get to work on projects like this and be outside and tending to my garden and not having every single week, like 3 to 4 days where I'm harvesting flowers, processing flowers, going and buying more from local farms, bringing them home, creating subscription bouquets and arrangements, and then spending a couple days driving all around the city to deliver them, and then coming back and trying to fit events in sometimes on the weekend. I'm trying to more intentionally do shorter stints of subscriptions that are more manageable when I know I'll have a bunch of blooms. And that way I don't have to like feel as pressured when I don't have a bunch. I'm just going to try to time them for when things are blooming and give myself a little bit more time to be in the garden and then working on events without having that 3 days of subscriptions right before it. So that's kind of my plan as I've been changing things around a little bit and experimenting with what works for my business. Obviously, I'm very privileged to be able to do that just in terms of having a part-time job that helps pay the bills and having a husband that helps pay the bills. So I feel very lucky to be in that position, but it's just, I wanted to share kind of where I'm at with my business and I don't have everything perfected yet. I'm trying to find a balance that works. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you guys. And I would love to hear if you're working on some garden projects, things you're excited about, ways you're trying to find work-life balance. I did set up this Flower Friends hotline and I got our first message, which I will play after the interview with Miranda. And I would love to keep playing messages from you guys with like funny stories of things going on in your garden, things you're working on. Like, this podcast for me is such a great way to connect with other flower growers through interviewing them. And then through the Instagram, I've been getting so many messages, making so many friends with people through this podcast. But because it's an audio medium, I really would love to share your voice in your own telling of your story or your, you know, it just would be fun to get like little minute long snippets from people. And I would love to share those with the other listeners. So if you'd like to do that, you can call in. The hotline number is 7313-FLOWER or 731-335-6937. Please call in and leave a message. I really want to hear from you. And I just think it'll be fun to be more interactive in an audio format. Okay, so let's get over to the interview with Miranda and then stay tuned for a couple things at the end of the podcast. Today, I'm so excited to welcome you to the podcast, Miranda. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Could you tell listeners about your business and what it is, where you're located, what it is that you guys do?
Yeah. So my name's Miranda Bowman. I'm a farmer. I own Wildry Farm. We are a specialty cut flower farm. We grow primarily in Bellingham, Washington. And we also lease additional acreage just north of our house, 15 minutes north in Ferndale, Washington. We grow about an acre of flowers and we're primarily, we grow for wholesale mostly.
Awesome. Well, I've been privileged to buy some of the most beautiful Lysianthus I've ever seen at Seattle Wholesale from you guys and yeah, other mums. I think you've sold mums there before, but yeah, just so excited about everything you're doing, especially with chrysanthemums, and so excited to ask you more. But could we start with how you first got into flowers and how that's evolved into the farm that you have now, the space you have now?
Yeah. So, I definitely was kind of all over the place with trying to choose a career. And, you know, I always loved gardening and I particularly love weeding, which not all gardeners love, but I really loved it. And I always thought, gosh, I wish I could just like weed my garden for a living. And somehow that kind of led me to, I took a small farming and ranching class through my local extension office. Wow. It was an incredible class. It was definitely I didn't really know that farming was an option, but I was definitely interested in animals and growing and things like that. And that was really the catalyst for farming. So it was a 10-week class. I did it with my partner and we got to go to a bunch of different farms here in Whatcom County where I live. And then we had people come, guest speakers, and tell us about their experiences. So that was kind of my introduction. And then there was a second part to the class called Business Farming. And in that class, I met a woman named Cheryl Thornton. And she and her husband, they owned Cloud Mountain Farm in Everson, Washington. It's a primarily a fruit farm. It's a nursery also, and it's been around for a very long time. And they were taking interns. I think I took this class back in 2012. It was really hard for me. I was working, I think, at a bank job at the time and going to school for accounting.
Wow.
And I was really scared to like, kind of, it was a full-time internship. So I would have to like quit my job and go into this internship. And I was really scared to do it, but my partner was like, you got to try it. So I did. So I did this full-time internship at this farm. They did do some vegetables, they did fruits, and the nursery was really great. The nursery production, because I learned just a lot about plants. I learned about botanical names, how to grow different things. And it was just really, it was amazing. I learned about irrigation and how to prune things, all the basics, seed starting, all that good stuff. So after that experience, I definitely knew that I wanted to farm. That was it for me. I think working outside every single day is your job. For me personally, I think if you have any kind of seasonal depression or anything like that, it really, I think it really changed something inside of me of like, I need to do this. Like I have to work outside, kind of being around the seasons. It was really powerful. So definitely knew I wanted to farm. And after that internship, I took a year off. I had a baby. And then in 2015, I started my own farm. Cloud Mountain had an incubator program. So I leased an acre of land from them and I started growing veggies, just a few flowers at the time. And that was kind of the catalyst that started it all. So I farmed veggies for a few years. And then in 2017, I was asked to start growing some flowers for a cafe here in Bellingham. They hadn't opened yet. It's called Camber Cafe.
Oh, that's so cool. What a good way. Like people approached you because they knew you were good at growing things to start flowers. Yeah.
So I had just a tiny, gosh, I had like, I think I grew sunflowers and marigolds and snapdragons, just little tiny kind of market bouquet things. Cause I loved flowers. Oh, have always loved flowers, but that was like the first time where I was like, oh, I'm going to like actually focus on like learning about cut flowers, and they wanted them year round. So, I can't grow them in the winter, but you know, like trying to grow them as much as possible throughout the year. So I really kind of buckled down and, learned all I could. I got some books and started doing research about that. And that was kind of it. In 2017, I grew a ton of flowers. I think I probably grew like 25% flowers and 75% vegetables at that time. And gosh, it was, I can't even describe to you, like once you really, or at least for me, once I started growing flowers, they just took over year after year. In 2018, it was 50% flowers. And then in 2019, I was like, no, we're done with veggies. They definitely took over. They were incredible. They were really successful for me. I think local flowers and the local flower movement started becoming a lot more popular. People were getting really passionate about it. And it was just really, really good timing to get into, I guess, growing cut flowers. And I did have a farming background, which I think really helped me. So yeah, that was kind of it. And we've just been kind of cruising ever since. So
wow, that's so exciting. And I bet the background in vegetables and everything you learned through that program and your internship and incubator, I'm sure that helped with the flower growing. Was that, did you find all of that to be pretty applicable to flower growing?
I feel like I think it's really important to have some sort of foundation. I don't think it's necessary. I think all of us can learn from trial and error. Big fan of failing. I think that's how we learn. But I think it's when you're trying to grow for a living, not just a hobby. This is how I make money. That it's really important. What I learned from farming with veggies is anybody can grow something, but not everybody can sell it. So selling is a big part of the game, and you need to have a market or a niche or an outlet for your products. And I think as I grew more flowers and I became more passionate, it was easy to sell them. Like, you know, when you're approaching people, I feel like that passion kind of comes out of you and people can see it. And, I wanted to continue to learn and build community, and the flower community was incredible. Florists were wonderful, and definitely social media has been a big tool for me. I know some people don't love it, but Instagram specifically within, mm-hmm. I think the flower world has been huge. It's been really impactful for me and really helpful to get my business out there. People can see pictures. They associate you with that. And I don't want to say it was an easy sell because it was really hard, but you know, it worked for me, and I definitely pounded pavement and like went knocking on doors trying to sell it. And once it started working, I kind of knew what to focus on. And it's been a wild ride, but I absolutely love it. And you know, I'm trying to continue to grow my farm, and we will see what happens. So
definitely. Well, since you were talking about customers and pounding the pavement, what were some of the ways you went about that? Because I think there's a lot of people who are excited about growing flowers, but aren't sure how to move them. And what did you find worked for you?
Yeah. So, I think one great thing about starting in veggies was, obviously I sold my vegetables at the farmer's market. That's kind of an easy place to start when you think about an outlet for selling things. However, when it came to cut flowers, I am a perfectionist. I'm very detail oriented, and that has served me really well with cut flowers because I want them to be absolutely perfect. And while I can sell plenty at the farmer's market, selling to florists or selling in the wedding industry, things like that, there it's really a, I think it's a different level of quality. You really want to have this really special kind of perfect bloom, you know? And that I jive really well with that. So I'm looking for things that are really perfect, that are harvested at the correct time. And that, you know, going into selling to florists was really a good niche for me. So I really just started by contacting people, by showing up at their door. I showed up at a New Leaf flower shop. I just brought a ton of flowers when they started blooming. The woman who owns it, her name is Trish. She was lovely. Definitely gave me some pointers that first year with my blown out tulips. Was like, okay, you need to harvest these a lot earlier. Lots of lessons were learned, but she bought a few from me and she was lovely. And she was interested in more. And then also, yeah, just reaching out to people. I continued to reach out to people. I definitely gave people free product. I'm a big believer in like showing up with what, you know, the best that you have to offer. And when people see that, when they smell it, when they touch it, it's kind of hard to say no. So that worked really well for me. That's how I kind of got my first set of florist customers besides doing farmers markets. And gosh, it's amazing because those first customers are still my best customers today. And we've grown together. So it's been really incredible. And as I think we're kind of moving away from florist sales now, I still have kind of my main people that I work with, but we're kind of consolidating and trying to go bigger, obviously. I can't imagine not working with like my select few just because I started with them. They have bought from me continuously every year, every week. And I don't know, they're part of my community. So I feel like, that there's kind of some of those people that I started with, all those relationships are really sacred to me, and I'll continue to, I guess, nurture those because I don't know. I think we kind of grew together is what I feel about that. So
absolutely. Yeah. No, that's so cool to be a part, you know, supplying that work, seeing where it ends up, having that personal relationship. It's, you know, but are you moving more into wholesale and away from like retail or direct to florists?
Yeah. So we've done everything over the years, lots of farmers markets all over Bellingham and Ferndale and Linton. We've done CSA, sold to restaurants, we've done pop-up sales. And after doing that for years, I'm entering my ninth season, farming just my farm from 2015 to now. And it's exhausting and it's hard to try to do it all. And over the years, I think one of the biggest things I've realized is your time is really valuable. And it's really hard as a farmer to value that time. But I found that as I've gotten older and I've really started to value my time and think about the ways that really make me money, running around all over the place and trying to sell to everybody wasn't working very well. And I was tired. And what I do best is growing. So once I started kind of dabbling with wholesalers where they buy much bigger quantities and they do the selling for you, it just became a no-brainer for me. They're buying much bigger quantities. I can kind of cut down on the things that I don't really want to grow and really focus on the things I'm good at. And especially after the last few years, which have been just wild, with flower sales and COVID and weddings, yeah, all that stuff. It's just continued to make more and more sense for our farm and what I want to do and how I want to grow. So we've been selling at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market for several years. I've been a consignment grower, never really been big enough to be kind of a permanent member. And this year, or I should say last year, I finally got some additional farmland. I was able to kind of grow my farm bigger, and we officially joined the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market as a provisional member last year. And that was it was fantastic. It's not just the sales part, it's the cooperative part. It's a community of growers and florists, and just it's really an incredible support system for everyone. So I really love being a part of that community, and I'm excited to see how that grows. So yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear that. I get to buy more of your flowers now. And
Yeah.
I imagine that move must have cut down on the individual communications that you have to have. And
Yeah.
especially with like updating, I bet. Did you have to deal with a lot of like, oh, you wanted this in your order, lovely florist, but it's actually not blooming at the time I thought it was going to. So let's
Yeah.
shift to this other thing.
Definitely. Communication, email, all of those things, which are can be lovely. I think technology and communication is awesome, but it's really time consuming. And as a person who's really my strengths are growing and farming, keeping up on email in the midst of a busy July or August is it's really hard. Thank God for text messaging, but trying to send out fresh sheets every week and just do the con with florists, it's really particular with colors and varieties and last minute items that you might need, that it gets to be a lot. And as much as I love it, it just makes a lot more sense to continue to try to consolidate and let others take on the work that you don't really want to do. So I think I used to have like 22 florists on my fresh sheet list. And now I pretty much only work with about five people. And it's florists who kind of, I know what they want to get every year. I know their styles and their colors, or it's people that aren't as picky. They're like, I'm having a white wedding, bring me anything white local. So those are kind of the florists that I work with now. But with Seattle, I actually don't even do a ton of pre-ordering with Seattle. And it's mostly because so many other farms do that. I am able to just bring what I grow and drop it off for floor sales. And that just works really, really well for me. And I love it. And kind of everybody there gets to choose their niche. And that's been, gosh, what a blessing. It's been a big kind of weight lifted off of me where I get to work with my few florists. They have their pre-orders. And then in Seattle, I just kind of bring the best of the best, the bounty, you know? So I really love that.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's awesome to hear. And I was wondering on the growing side, if you could kind of describe your setup at your farm. Are you split onto two sites? Is that what I remember?
Yeah, so last year, gosh, after years of looking for additional farming property, I own a half acre property with a house and a farm in my backyard. I live in a neighborhood in Bellingham that has large lots. So on my half acre, I grow a quarter acre. I have my hoop houses here. I have two hoop houses, almost, I think about 3,000 square feet of like covered growing space,
That's incredible.
a quarter acre of I planted woodies this fall, and my cooler and my workshop is all here at my home farm. And I've farmed it as I've said before, I farmed at Cloud Mountain before I found my home. And I had a property right next door to my house for several years through the Colchin Land Trust. They are going to be building affordable housing behind my property, but before they did that, it was kind of a vacant lot. So I've been farming there for a few years, and I knew a deadline was coming up where I was going to lose that space, and last year was the year. So I've been looking for land. I finally found some land just north of my property. I have an additional acre at Box Berry Farm. It's an 80-acre berry farm. And it's close. They're a wonderful family, and it's just really allowed me to really expand my operation. They have all the tractors and the equipment that I really need that I don't have. I don't have a large tractor, and they do a lot of my cultivation work for me. So it's been incredible, A, to grow, and then also just to have kind of the support of another community, another farming family. They've been really lovely to work with. And yeah, we've developed a really interesting co-working relationship. So yeah, I'm trying to think what else. For example, like one really interesting thing about Box Berry Farm is they have 5 acres of blueberries, and I get to go and cut the blueberry foliage, and then I sell it at the market. So they take care of the plants, I cut the foliage, and then we just like split the profits, and it's been incredible. I mean, it's really they still get to harvest berries. I don't take too much foliage. So that's been really wonderful.
And blueberry foliage is the best. Yeah. And it's a win-win for both of you. Like you're saying, if they're helping you with certain things and then you can sell certain things that they might not be able to otherwise. Wow. That is such a cool partnership.
It's really great. It's obviously it's really hard to find land in Western Washington. Probably Washington in general. So it's been, I have not been able to grow my farm until I could find additional land. So it's been a really big deal for me. And there's opportunity there. They have a lot of land. The family's been farming for 50 years. The youngest son just joined kind of the farm. So I'm hoping that is kind of a place where I can put down roots, and they've been really welcoming and supportive. But it's really great because it's so close. Also, I can open up the hoop houses in the morning. I have my workshop. I kind of, set up space, and then I kind of take off and head up to Boxberry Farm, do a lot of my work up there. And then the only bad thing is hauling flowers back and forth. Sometimes I have to make multiple trips, but it's not too far and it's definitely worth it. So yeah, it's absolutely wild.
Good. Well, what are you growing up on your new space?
It's mostly annuals. I finally, like I said before, I just planted woodies I've been wanting to plant woodies for years. And if people don't know what woodies are, it's shrubs. They take a really long time.
The ones that you planted?
So let's see, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I planted some blue muffin viburnum. We got some lilac, some mock orange. I just put in a row of flowering quince just in the spring because it was back ordered. I'm really excited about that. It's thornless, which we all love. Oh,
great.
I have a ton of eucalyptus here, which a kind of a funny thing about where I live is my house, my little home farm is really close to the water. So my climate is actually really different than just that 15 minutes north of me. They can't always overwinter eucalyptus where they are, whereas where I live, it does very, very well. So I have also a bunch of eucalyptus here, and I'm adding more and more perennials all the time. So this is kind of my perennial location. And then all of my dahlias, all of my annuals, zinnias, snapdragons, sunflowers, that's all out there. And I can grow huge rows for my wholesalers. So it's been really wonderful.
And how many dahlias do you grow?
I actually don't grow a ton of dahlias. They are my biggest crop by far, hands down. However, it's kind of funny. I hear about people growing, thousands and thousands of dahlias, but I'm not interested in growing more than I can harvest. So I only grow 1200 dahlias, but I cut them every single day. So I harvest every stem and I sell every stem. I will probably add a few more this year. I pretty much need to get a dedicated dahlia cutter, but I don't want to grow more because if I can't keep up on harvest, it's really not worth it for me. So I try to only grow as many as I can cut. And it's actually served me really well. They're very productive. I keep them cut. They keep on coming. And I only grow ball varieties. I only grow 13 varieties, grow really large quantities. And that, a lot of people like to grow all the things. Over the years, we've really cut back on the varieties that we've grown, and we just focus on the things that do really well and grow really well. I'll have 100 white dahlias, and then I'll have a second planting of 100 white dahlias. And that works really well for us. And that's what I'm going to continue to do. So, yeah.
And that's nice and consistent. You kind of know what you're working with that way. And it's not like you can always fill buckets full of that one variety. I imagine if you're selling wholesale versus having seven stems of this one variety and not having a full bunch. Is that part of the reason you would do fewer?
Yeah, I think it just makes a lot of sense as far as, because we're really, again, with wholesalers, a lot of it is wedding work. So people are ordering 30 bunches of white dahlias, and balls hold up really well compared to the others, even though they're beautiful and they're pretty. I like a hardy flower. I harvest them a lot earlier than I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people wait till they're kind of fully open. I really push the limits on that because I want them really fresh and I want them to hold up well. And that's another thing about having so little is I'm harvesting them right when I think they're at the point where they can still open really nicely, but that they're going to last a lot longer. And yeah, I pretty much just grow really standard colors, white, burgundy, you know, bronze. I am adding a variety this year. I'm adding Bracken Rose because it's really popular. and it's funny, I'm not really into the hype of the Dahlia thing and varieties, but it's more the color. And I had a dear florist of mine share a couple tubers. I was not about to pay $20 for a Bracken Rose tuber, but she shared some of her tubers and I took cuttings. So I got like 25 cuttings off these tubers. My wonderful friend Carmen. We are adding one fancy color, which is really exciting. But yeah, I mostly kind of just focus on what sells and what does well. I wouldn't say dahlias are my favorite flower, but they are super popular right now. And I will definitely continue to grow them because they're still wonderful and fun. And, you know, that's what we're good at. So they grow so well here. I can't even believe it. You don't have too many bugs. So that's really helpful.
That's so true. Well, speaking of things that are growing in popularity, I know that you have been selling mum cuttings for, is this going to be your second or third year?
Yeah, this is going to be our second year selling mum cuttings. Mums are our second biggest crop. And I will say that that is between cut flowers and the cuttings or plugs, chrysanthemum plugs is what we call them. But yeah, it's been a long journey trying to get to this point of selling plugs from first starting the flowers in 2017. That first year I got 6 plants and to be here now it's been absolutely wild.
It's mum love from now. Yeah. It's like you get your hands on them and then just the way that they, well, I guess I should ask you, what do you love about mums?
Gosh. You know, I think I was really lucky the very first year. Mums can be a lot of work. There's kind of a lot of steps in the process, depending on if you want to take cuttings and all that. But that first year that I started growing them in 2017, I only got 6 plants. So I do recommend starting small, getting the hang of them, but they just grew really well for me. I have a really tiny greenhouse that came with my property before I had hoop houses. So I was able to kind of keep the plants protected. I pinched them, I took cuttings, I did all the things, and they were just, they blew me away. They last a really long time in a vase. I did disbud them the first year. If people don't know what disbudding is, it's when you're looking for a really large, a lot of people call them football mums. If you take off the side buds of the flower, there's a main bud and then there's some side buds. If you take off those side buds early, you'll get one big massive bloom. And somehow I managed to do that that first year. And I was blown away. I got 6 different varieties and they were all different shapes and colors and they bloom in the fall kind of when everything else is finishing and they're tired. And it was just that first year, so invigorating to me. And I've been just completely addicted ever since. Farming is really hard and you're really tired in the fall. And every single year, that last crop, you know, you put in a lot of time and effort and it really pays off, just the beauty of it. And again, for cut flowers, they last a really long time. So it feels really good to kind of, if I'm going to sell that to somebody, whether it's a retail customer or a wholesale customer, it's going to last a long time and they're going to enjoy it for a really long time. So I really love that.
Yeah. It seems like quality and vase life is a good theme with you for your product.
I love an Icelandic poppy, even though, you know, they can be short-lived, they're whimsical and beautiful, but I'm definitely a big fan of hardy flowers. And I think it's just because even in the house, if you're not taking good care of them and not adding fresh water every day, it's really incredible to look over and to see a fresh cut flower last for 10 days to 2 weeks. I'd say it's fairly uncommon when you get flowers from a lot of places because they typically are old, but you get like a local really sturdy flower, that sucker is going to last for a long time. And I love when people comment on that. They're like, I had no idea that cut flowers could last this long. So that's really fun.
I had a couple mums that were lasting for like 3 to 4 weeks in the vase. I could not believe how long. And that's part of why I love them as both like a small, a very, very small scale grower and a florist, is they're just so nice. And like you say, with customers, it's just kind of a home run because a lot of people think they're dahlias. Like some of my neighbors were like, oh, I really love your dahlias in like November when I was out cutting them. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And I just, you know, it's so funny because they're just so beautiful and dimensional, but they last so long. And like you say, they're at that point of the season when not much else is going on. So do you have a few favorite varieties that you could share with us, or is it hard to pick? Because you love so many, probably.
It is really hard to pick. I think one of the hardest things is that I started buying my, I will say they're heirloom chrysanthemums. It's a big difference there. Of the chrysanthemums I'm growing are not kind of the chrysanthemums you're finding in the grocery store. These are really old varieties. A lot of cut flower growers have kind of stopped growing them because they can be hard to transport or fly across, you know, the country or the world. So these are really kind of old, gorgeous varieties. And the first year I bought them, I got mine from King's Mums. They're kind of the standard for heirloom chrysanthemums if you want to buy plugs. The very first year of the six that I bought, two of them continue to stand out to be my favorite. That's River City and Norton Vic. I don't know why I love them. River City is like an apricot peachy color, really depends on where you live and temperature. And then Norton Vic is just, it's like perfect. It's a perfect flower. It's a beautiful, rich color. Some new ones that I grew this year, Seton's Galaxy, that was brand new to me. That's a really delicate mum. It's every year I feel like when a mum blooms, because they kind of bloom at different times, I'm like, oh, that's my favorite, or that's my favorite. So it is hard to pick a favorite, but I feel like the ones that I grew my first year, some of them still continue to be my favorites. Now I think I grow 70 different varieties.
Oh,
and I really need to start cutting some out, but it's really hard just because, again, they're all really different when you start paying attention to petal shape or size or just the different cultivars and the different classifications. It's hard to stop. I'm a little addicted. I have culled a few over the years. It's mostly ones that are really short and not good for cut flower production, but if they have an interesting color or shape, I'm kind of hooked on that. I'm really particular about color and shape. And if they're weird or different or kind of fall toned, it's kind of hard not to love them. So
totally. Yeah. Well, I support that. And how many do you offer for your sales? If you're growing 70, are you doing a smaller subsection for your plugs?
Yeah, gosh, I don't know off the top of my head how many I'm offering this year. I want to say it's in the ballpark of 20. Okay. So for what I'm offering to people for plugs is really the ones that I have the most of. So ones that I have big quantities of, tried and true, cut for me, ones that are really good for cut flowers. They have really good color. It's always hard when I do get smaller quantities of things to sell them. I am trying to sell a few new varieties this year, not from King's Mums. Over the last few years, I found just a few other sources, not a lot. There's not a lot of people that are able to sell and ship heirloom mums right now. There's a couple, but it's definitely a niche that I saw a market for. But I joined the Evergreen Chrysanthemum Association, last year. And that's where I got some of my new varieties. And I would recommend anybody anywhere in the country to check out your local Chrysanthemum Society, Association, or club, because they really have really interesting and hard to find varieties that can be really fun. And that's this year what I'm able to offer is a couple new varieties. And hopefully as we continue forward and I build up my stock, that I will be able to have things that nobody else has. So that's been really fun to experiment with. And I'm just starting to get to offer just a few of those this year, but yeah, build up stock of some of those that are really different and hard to find.
Great. Well, I will start digging more beds now so that I can buy all these cool varieties that you have coming. I will say you got me completely hooked on River City. I just have never seen such a beautiful color. And I got two plants from you last year. And then if you have those, which it sounds like you will, I'll be ordering more. So
I'll have a lot of those ones. They're one of my favorites. They're really productive. They are an early, they kind of like bud up really early, or the plants start going even when it's really cold out. So they're kind of all of the different varieties kind of come out at different times or wake up, and River City is always early. It's really productive. Yeah, it's a really good one to start with. So I would highly recommend that for beginners.
Well, I was wondering if someone does order mums from you, if you could kind of talk through the care from the time they arrive in the mail and sort of maybe where they should be planted, what soil, what conditions they like, and kind of how to successfully grow them.
Yeah. So the biggest thing if you're going to order chrysanthemum plugs from anybody, a lot of companies offer plants where you can just get a potted plant, which is great and fine. But I like plugs. And the main reason is because root development is really important for chrysanthemums. So when you get a plug, you can put it, you know, into a bigger container, and you really want them to get a big, nice root system before you're kind of potting them up or potting them on. Sometimes when you get the potted plants from places, I won't name any names, but a lot of times they can be really pot bound. And while mums can be just fine in those circumstances and grow and be beautiful, I really like getting plugs just because you have a lot more control over kind of what you're potting them into if you're doing it in a pot or in a garden bed, for example. So the first thing to do if you're going to get a plant is I would say pot up. If you're getting plugs, you got to pot them up right away. Like the first day you get them, it's really important. They don't want to live in a little plug. Plugs are really great for people like me, growers, to sell and ship, but they really want to be in a pot or in the ground. Mums do fantastic in pots. I cannot stress that enough. While mine are in the ground because I have a hoop house, anybody can grow chrysanthemums. You can grow them on an apartment deck. You can probably grow them in a window. They will do just fine. And you can even get a big, beautiful bloom, even in a fairly small pot. So that's really fun. But if you order plugs from me, I'd say the first thing you need to do is you got to pot them up. It's not recommended to use moisture control potting soil. And it's simply because mums don't like wet feet. They don't want a lot of moisture. You want to kind of let them dry out in between waterings. You don't want to leave them soaking wet. They can rot. So definitely just kind of standard potting soil is great. One of my biggest pieces of advice for people that grow chrysanthemums is to feed them. If you want that big, beautiful bloom, not everybody does. Some people grow spray mums or cushion mums, which are smaller. And some people don't disbud. A lot of people don't. But if you really want that big, beautiful bloom, you got to keep them fed. And they're not super picky, but a well-balanced like 10-10-10 fertilizer is great. I grow organically, so it's kind of harder for me to find those bigger numbers in organic products. But just kind of a balanced fertilizer, you can either do a liquid or just like add a little sprinkle here and there. Keeping them well fed, I think, is a really big deal. And then, the most important part is keeping them staked or giving them netting so that those big, huge blooms, if you're getting big mums, don't fall over. That's a hard thing in the cut flower world, is to always net and protect your flowers, but it's really important because they're really heavy. And once, if they are outside and they get rained on, they will topple right over if they don't have good netting or support.
Great. And then do you have tips on like when is the best time to harvest them?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think that really depends on the cut flower. You can harvest them pretty far open and they will still hold up. You also don't want to harvest them when they're like in a tight bud phase, because then they won't completely open. Mums are really, there's this really fine place in between, is like, I try to hit them right before they really fully open, where they're really almost right about to unfurl. And that's when I like to cut mine for cut flowers. And that's when you're really going to get the best space life. So you want them to have fully developed petals. You don't want it to be too tight. But once those big petals start to kind of lift up and lift off, that's the best time to harvest the mum, depending. Every variety is different. So I do want to say that if you cut too early, they won't fully open and give you that really big show. But yeah, I really encourage people to try, like, cut it, see what happens, put it in a vase.
Yeah.
For me, even I don't know, I guess maybe I used to look at it as mistakes, but now I look at it as such a big learning curve, because every single plant and every single flower is different. And like I said, every chrysanthemum is different. Like, some of them like to be harvested later, some you can harvest a little bit sooner. But yeah, I just really encourage people to cut them and try it. And it's fun. It's fun to see what works, and sometimes it doesn't, but you learn a lot along the way. So,
well, I was wondering, I've heard of people that potted up their chrysanthemums and then they bring them inside, maybe into like a basement, or put them, you know, under cover of some sort in the winter. I've always left mine in the garden. And so I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about overwintering mums and sort of how you do that with yours in the hoop house. Do you just keep them in the ground?
Yeah. And they don't all survive necessarily. I get a big chunk that do. My biggest culprit where I live is water. Since we get a ton of rain, sometimes even in a hoop house, they can get, the ones that are like the outer rows can get soggy and they can rot. I definitely recommend for heirloom mums, depending on your growing zone, to dig up your stool or your mother plant in the fall and put it in a pot. And yeah, put it in a basement, or you don't want a place too warm, because you do kind of want them to go a little bit dormant, but definitely to bring them into a protected area. I think technically in zone 8, I consider myself more of a zone 7. I've spent a lot of money on my chrysanthemums over the years, so I probably wouldn't leave them in the ground anymore. But some varieties, if you have a couple different plants of it, I highly recommend to try it. If it's not in a super wet place, if it's like under an eave or something, try it out and see what happens. Some are really hardy and do just fine. Other ones are a lot more fickle, but I'm definitely just like kind of Dahlia tubers, a big believer in like dig them up, put them in a pot, put them in a protected kind of cool place in a garage. And then usually they're fine over the winter. Sometimes you might want to add a little water, but for the most part, if you have like semi-damp soil that you've kind of dug them out of, they will be fine. And usually about the springtime, you will start seeing new growth or green shoots, and then you can pot them up in new potting soil in the spring or plop them in the ground, and those babies will start growing. They're pretty darn hardy, most of them. So yeah, it's another bonus of why I love growing them.
Then are they like dahlias, where I've heard this again, and this is just things that I'm hearing online, so who knows if it's true, but someone was telling me that you don't want to have the mother root to grow off of the next year, that it's actually better to take a cutting because it will be more vigorous. And so I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. So you can definitely keep the mother and grow more plants if you want to. I really recommend renewal. And it's mostly because of, I want the most stems per plant. A mother plant is going to continue to get big and get really big roots, and they require more fertilizer, they need more nutrients. They start getting really woody. And I don't necessarily think the second year they're less productive, but they will start to send up less flower stems. That's what I want the most of.
Okay.
So what I really recommend to everybody, and to just have really healthy, vigorous plants, is after you've potted that plant up in the fall and you brought it in and you start getting this new green growth, you really recommend taking new cuttings and starting new every year. You don't have to, but I do think that it's just a way to continuously have really robust, healthy plants. They don't need to eat as much. And yeah, it's just a really, I don't know, for me, it's also kind of part of the process. When you learn to take cuttings, if you get one chrysanthemum plug from me, depending on the variety and how fast it grows, you can get multiple plants off that. You cut off the growing tip, you get some wet soil, you get a little rooting hormone, you stick it, you know, you can root it right into that soil and produce lots of plants. I mean, sometimes you can get like six plants off of one cutting. And I don't know, it's really fun. And I think it's learning propagation. Mums are really, they root pretty easily. They're not too picky as long as they're not too damp. And they're a really good plant to start with. And I feel like once you start propagating your own plants, oh goodness, help us all with all of the things you're going to start propagating. But yeah, I think they're a really good entry kind of catalyst for that, or starter plant for beginning propagation. So
yeah, to be honest, I haven't rooted. I've taken a few dahlia cuttings before, but I've never actually taken cuttings off of a mum. So maybe I will give that a try this year. And I bet that gives a little bit more insurance. Like you're saying, if you take a couple cuttings and then you have three plants instead of one, you can try one of those outside this year and see if it will hold up over winter where you live, and just gives you more room to experiment. So I really, really appreciate the tips there. That's great.
Yeah. It's really important for me. Again, like I keep my plants in the ground and then I take cuttings off them, but then I will rip all of them out and I will replace. I crop rotate. So my mums will go into a different space. Like this year, all of those plants will get taken out, and then I'll plant a whole new section of plants in another hoop house this next year. But it's important for my soil. And then also the vigor of your flowers. Like if you want to get those big, beautiful blooms, it's best to get them with those new fresh little plants that are just ready to get big and bloom for you. So yeah, it's really fun. And yeah, I really encourage people to try doing mum cuttings. It's really fun and it's really easy. And I feel like once you start taking cuttings of things, you're like, oh gosh, you start looking around your yard at all the things you can do.
Exactly. Well, so tell me when your sale is going to be.
So our first sale is this Friday. I only advertise it to my newsletter subscribers. People can subscribe to my newsletter at wildryefarm@gmail.com. They have become so big over the years that I really can't even keep up with the demand of just, I don't even advertise it on Instagram for the most part anymore, because I can't keep up, frankly. Like if I could buy a big heated greenhouse and do more of this, I probably would. But as of right now, I have almost 400 people on my newsletter list, which is insane since it's only year two, and I cannot produce enough. So last year I just did, I kind of did first come first serve for mum cuttings. And this year I realized what would work best is every time there's a new batch available, then I will offer them for sale. So yeah, if you're interested, anybody in getting mum cuttings, just go to my website, www.wildryfarm.com. The information is there. You can email me and get on our newsletter, and then you can see the dates and times that we have all of our chrysanthemum plug sales this year. So yeah, it's going to be crazy and wild, but I'm really excited. So.
And then will you have any in-person sales?
Yes. So one of the most exciting things that I did start last year, since we are pretty much only doing wholesale sales for the most part, me and my absolutely wonderful flower friend Celeste of Free Range Flower Farm, we are going to have a local plant sale here in Whatcom County. It's April 29th from 11 to 2 p.m. and it's at Celeste Farm. She owns Free Range Flower Farm. And I'm going to have tons of chrysanthemum cuttings there. Celeste does all kinds of cut flower annuals. We will have dahlia tubers. We have a veggie farmer who's going to come sell vegetable starts. And we're also going to have a coffee barista and somebody doing pastries there. So we had an absolutely wild turnout last year at our very first plant sale. We had it at a park. It was nuts. And so we moved it to Celeste Farm this year. And yeah, it's kind of the only time that I'm really selling to the community this year, but I really, really like it. That's kind of my time to power up and recharge with my local community. And it's really fun to have people kind of get all the things they need for their flower and veggie gardens.
Yeah. Oh, well, that sounds like a great day with all the amenities there too. You make an event out of it.
We're
So
trying, yeah, bring in more
wonderful.
people and more community. So yeah, it's been really fun.
I actually had someone text me today, Molly from Washito Flowers. She texted to say, "Do you want to drive up to Bellingham together for
Yes,
Miranda's sale?" So
Molly's wonderful. I think she's kind of caught the chrysanthemum bug as well.
yes, yeah,
Great.
absolutely. I know I've learned some tips from her, and it's wonderful. So I love moms. Thank you so much for sharing all this insight, Miranda. I really appreciate it. I know you're super busy, and I'm just so excited to get the chance to talk to you, and I can't wait to buy more of your flowers this year.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it's really exciting. I think just I think the best part of selling chrysanthemums and why we've kind of gone into this kind of plant, I never thought I would kind of get into the nursery side, but I think empowering people to grow things, to like have a little baby, have it grow and then watch it bloom is really, it's a really important part of connecting with nature. So encouraging people to garden and kind of experience the joy of flowers. One thing that was hard for me going from veggies to flowers was trying to kind of find like my place in the world, like, ooh, you know, I don't know, people need to eat, but do they really need flowers? And I think over time I've learned like connecting, like the beautiful part of nature with our soul is really, really important. And so, even if people live in an apartment, or even if they don't have a balcony and they can grow something, you know, on their windowsill and like connect with that, I don't know. It's really one of the best parts of my job. So, it's been really fun to kind of connect with people in that way and encourage people to grow. So,
Yeah, that is so powerful. It's honestly life-changing. It changed my life too.
yeah,
So I
totally.
love it. And being outside, like you say, just more often, it's just such a game changer for at least for my mental health and just like stability as a human. So I
Absolutely.
really, really connect with everything you're saying. Well, could you tell listeners that might not follow you already, how they can, you mentioned your website, but could you is Instagram your preferred mechanism that you use? Are you on Facebook or other social
Yeah,
media?
Instagram is definitely my preferred. We're kind of getting off of Facebook these days, and it's mostly just because it's really hard. There's so many platforms. I used to juggle them, and honestly, it's actually been really hard for me just to even keep up with Instagram. Over the last, people message you on Instagram, and it's hard to keep up with emails and different social media outlets. So definitely Instagram is a wonderful place to find me, Wild Rice Farm, or yeah, going to the website and you can find my email on my website. Those are really great ways to connect. And if you're interested in chrysanthemum plugs to join our newsletter, I really only send out letters regarding chrysanthemums, and it's kind of only for a short window, which is when we sell them, which is March through June. So if anybody's interested in that, they can sign up for that.
Perfect. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it and hope to run into you soon or let's get together sometime.
That sounds great, Sarah. Yeah, I hope one day I will run into you in Seattle. That would be really
Yes.
lovely. And yeah, and I'll definitely be buying more flower arrangements from you in the future. Love,
Oh
love
my
those local
gosh.
flowers. I don't arrange, but I absolutely love getting them from the people that do. So
Thank you. That was a challenge because it was very early, but it was so much fun to just have a little bit of color and get my hands on flowers again. So thank you so much for that order too. That was really nice.
that was really great for me too. So yeah, I appreciate it. Well, thank you so much for having me,
Awesome.
Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Was fangirling pretty hard during that conversation. I am just such a big fan of Miranda and her moms and the beautiful flowers that she grows. I feel really lucky to live close enough to one of the markets where she sells her flowers and just am always blown away when I see her quality. There's some of the flowers that I grow that I feel like I do a pretty good job, but then I see Miranda's, I'm like, oh, that's like 6 inches taller. She just really knows her plants. She has a good, working relationship with them. And I love that. So I loved hearing about that. And I loved hearing about how she got into growing, and her background, everything that she's built over time with that background through the internship and the incubator program, and then at her home, and now at the new property at the Berry Farm. I really loved hearing about kind of the mutually beneficial things that she's doing at the Berry Farm with the owners there. And especially as prices are increasing and there are labor shortages, I find it really interesting to learn how people are working together. And I wonder if any of you listening are putting in orders together, leasing land together, maybe sharing delivery responsibilities or selling your flowers cooperatively, maybe working directly on like direct farmer-florist relationships and connections. I would love to hear about that. So if that's something you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail, it might be played on the podcast. It's 7313-FLOWER or 731-335-6937. I just loved hearing about Miranda's experience with that, and I'm just super curious if other people have arrangements like that. And then speaking of the voicemail, let's get over to the first voicemail I'll play on the podcast.
Hi, Sarah. I love your podcast. My name is Michelle. I live in Kentucky, and I like to grow cut flowers in my home garden. I would love to hear more on tunnels and greenhouses and any form of structure to grow earlier, grow later, because I really don't know the difference between a hoop house, all these different terms that I hear people going over. So that's an idea for an upcoming show. Alrighty, thank you so much.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for calling in. It was awesome to hear from you. That is a great question and a great idea for an upcoming podcast episode. I can just give you a brief overview of what my experience has been. I grow in a really urban setting, so I use more of what I call a zippy, which is just like a little mini plastic greenhouse, maybe 4 feet long, 2 feet wide, 2 feet tall. And it looks just like a greenhouse with the kind of like peaked roof where rain will run down that and not just sit stagnant on the top. But the reason that I use that is because here in Seattle, we have so much rain and it really tends to wash away things. And then if the temperature drops below freezing, all the plants are wet or the soil is wet around those new roots. And if it freezes, it can really kill those little plants. So I like to keep things dry over the winter if I have cold hardy seedlings that I've started outside or I'm keeping outside throughout the winter. You can also use those to protect certain plants, like right in the garden. You could stake them right into a little area, or you could use something like a caterpillar tunnel, which I've also used before on a small scale. I got little green hoops just off of Amazon. I put them in, they were sized for the garden beds that I use, and I put them right into the garden beds, and then I put frost cloth over the top of that. And basically what that did is it just protects from the direct rainfall, and it still allows light in and a bit of airflow depending on how you vent it. But it kind of keeps things protected from super cold drops in temperature or really heavy storms, maybe hail, things like that. I personally have never kept a little mini caterpillar tunnel up over the entire winter because when I did that caterpillar tunnel and I had it there for a few weeks, I got a pretty big infestation of like fungus gnat type flies that were just super small. They not super bothersome, but I do think they were going for some of the roots of my plants. And that's one thing where I've noticed if you enclose plants, you really have to watch it and make sure you're ventilating so that predators to those pests can get in, and just to keep things nice and happy and aerated and air flowing for your plants. Then there's things called hoop houses or high tunnels. And I should mention on caterpillar tunnels, the ones I did were just mini for my garden, but there's a pretty set size that a lot of farmers use to fit over their rows of plants at farms. I don't use those, but I do know there's like a Johnny's hoop bender that you can have like a standard size for the hoops that you're creating. And then you can kind of put some stakes in the ground essentially, and then put that hoop up over those stakes so that it's really sturdy. And there's a special way. I took the Floret workshop and she showed a whole video of how you can basically cover that caterpillar tunnel and tie the strings for really easy venting that you can just basically slide the plastic up and down every day or whenever you need to vent it. And then there's strings that really keep the plastic on for cases of like high wind or other things like that. And then for high tunnels or hoop houses, I think of that as basically like a super large caterpillar tunnel. And, you know, hopefully other farmers can call in and give us a better update on this, or I'll get someone on who specifically grows in all of these things. But Miranda, who was just on this episode, mentioned her hoop houses, and I'm not sure exactly what hers look like, but the way that I think of hoop houses is like a XL caterpillar tunnel where there's really large metal hoops in whatever shape that they're in, and it's covered with like a plastic film basically that keeps the inside a slightly higher temperature than outside and keeps things dry and also can keep away predators, like not predators, but plant eaters like deer or, you know, maybe mice, things that might otherwise have an easier time getting in if it's an enclosed space, might have a harder time. But then some of those animals can climb underneath and really wreak havoc if you don't catch it, is kind of my understanding from watching people on Instagram and YouTube. And then I personally think of a greenhouse as more of like a permanent structure that has either polycarbonate or glass on it, although people probably just define this in different ways. I tend to think of greenhouses as like a particularly English thing. The English love gardening so much, and there's a few prominent gardeners that I follow that have greenhouses that are built with glass, and they're really like sturdy, stable, permanent structures that people are typically pouring cement for and having like a base to the house. And some people keep them heated throughout the winter, some people don't. I think even on the high tunnel and the like hoop houses, some farmers keep those heated. So we really do need to get someone on here to talk about these things, because I'm an urban grower, but I just wanted to give you a quick overview from my perception, and I would love to interview someone on our next season who can talk more about this. So thank you so much for sharing the topic, and yeah, if anyone's listening that has grown in multiple of these structures, I would love to hear your take on it. So please call in. It's 7313-FLOWER or 731-335-6937. That's the Flower Friends hotline. I'd love to hear from you and just make this podcast more interactive. All right. I am just wrapping up here. We are over an hour. I was always trying to keep Flower Friends under an hour, but I just get carried away with great conversations. There's such awesome growers and guests coming on, so it's hard to keep it to an hour. And I figure, you know, at least for me, sometimes when I'm out gardening, I'll throw a couple podcasts in, and the longer the better, because it gives me an excuse. I'm like, oh, once this is over, I'll go inside. So if I'm getting run away with the time here, maybe you can split this into a few sessions, but I'm liking having the longer conversations and just letting it flow and getting a lot of questions in. So thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoy the Flower Friends podcast, the best way you can support it is to share the podcast with a flower friend who might like listening in as well. And if you can go to wherever you listen and rate the podcast, give it a rating, review it with a comment about what you like about it, or if you don't like it, you can leave that too. Please be honest. And if you can subscribe to it where it automatically downloads on your phone, all three of those things just help give visibility to the podcast and helps me to get more guests on the show. So I really appreciate you doing that, and I appreciate you listening so much. It means the world to me. This is such a special community, and I feel so lucky to just interact with people in the amazing ways that we have been. So thank you. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a wonderful week. I will be back with some more exciting episodes soon. I am so excited to share them with you and can't wait. All right. Take care, guys. Have a good week.